welcome to our first member experience panel of the new year. We have Kathleen Dollard with us and Dave Gardner. So I'm going to let them just kind of tell you their own story for a few minutes and talk about, you know, why they joined ACA, why ACA has been a great part of their business experience, and just give you a little bit of flavor. And then after that, we're just going to open up to Q&A, and it's all you. You just get to drive the show. I will go on mute, but I'll be here in case you need me. So actually, I'll wait until introductions are over, but then I'll go on to mute. So I've got somebody who's got to let you go first, ladies first. So
oh, well, thank
please
you.
Tell us your story.
Okay. Well, let's see. My story is that I sort of consider myself to be an accidental entrepreneur. I started taking CFP classes back in 1996, and I had no intention of ever working for myself. I just thought, well, I'll get the CFP thing under my belt, and then somebody will hire me to do financial planning. Well, I think things might be different now, but it didn't work that way. So I worked for other people for a few years, and then I decided that if I really wanted to do this thing called financial planning that supposedly nobody would pay for, I was going to have to go off on my own. So I went off on my own in 1999. So as an aside, I'll be celebrating 15 years this April. And it was tough. I was kind of unfocused, trying to be everything to everybody. I was registered. I was licensed with insurance. I was doing everything, trying to do hourly planning, trying to do investments. It was crazy. Well, in 2001, I joined the Garrett Network, and it was a huge boost for me to do that. It was a great organization, much like ACA is, and it got me so that I didn't have to reinvent the wheel. And it was good for me for about 3 years, and I totally embraced the hourly thing. And about year five, I just realized, you know, I was working my tail off and not making any money. And I knew I had to do something because I still liked what I did. I just wanted to make some money at it. So I started exploring ACA. And I had actually explored ACA back before I joined Garrett. But at the time, ACA was very tax-oriented. I got the impression that you had to do taxes. And I really wasn't that interested in doing taxes. So I kind of put it off and joined Garrett. Well, by around 2006, I was looking for something that would work a little better. ACA had changed a little bit. It was still very tax-oriented, but there wasn't a requirement that you do taxes. People were outsourcing. People were not doing taxes. It seemed more flexible. And so I joined, and I actually maintained a dual membership for a couple of years because it was really hard for me to leave Garrett. I loved the people. The organization was great, but just wasn't working for me as a way of making money. I had a tough time making the transition from hourly, where I probably worked with over 200 clients. And it was, in a way, it was actually more like being on commission. I had so many people. But I never really knew who I was going to work with next, or, you know, where the next check was going to come from. So I joined ACA. I finally got myself to where I made an offer to all of my existing clients that I was doing this new thing called a retainer. And I gave people, I sent out a letter saying I was going to give them a pretty significant discount if they would transition over to this thing. And a handful of clients did. Enough to make me pretty happy. And at that point, I decided that from then on, I was only going to offer the retainer. And it's worked wonderfully for me. And I have to say that, you know, ACA is a great organization. And I've been very happy. And things have just worked out excellent. Now I'm to the point where I call it shrinking to retirement. I'm not taking on new clients for the past few years. And I've decided that if and when clients do leave, that I won't replace them, so that I can continue to work into my what I might be retirement years, but at a lower level. So you might wonder, you know, at this point, why would I be continuing to stay with ACA? And I think it's really all about the way ACA helped me develop relationships with my clients, which is what was really missing when I was hourly. So I have a lot, I get a lot of fulfillment from working with my clients. But the other thing is just being part of ACA. The community is what keeps me. And I think, you know, part of that community is our annual conference. Part of it is the intranet that I'm on every day, you know, off and on all day during the day, getting tips, learning about other resources, hearing about things that I don't know anything about, but somebody else knows the answer. And all the other shared resources that people, you know, will put on the intranet to share how they do things. So I guess that's my story. I guess there'll be a point where people can ask questions, but I think that's all I really have to say for now.
Okay, that's perfect. And yes, there will definitely be a point. So Dave, you are up next. Tell us your tale.
Okay. I've been an ACA member for 6.5 years, and I never really tried to start a business without it. And I knew I was going to have to go with some model when I got started, whether it was ACA, Garrett, or something else. My background is that in 2002, I was working in high-tech sales and essentially calling on big telecom companies and executives there. And it was an interesting job. I loved a lot of things about it, but ultimately I decided that that's not what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, and I really had no ambition to be my boss at all. And so naturally I began to think, okay, what's a good thing for me for the next step? And like Kathy, I started taking CFP courses, because it was always a topic I was interested in, and just started doing that just to see if it could pan into something. And then after I finished that, made a transition where I worked as a contractor for some other financial planners, actually preparing financial plans, doing that on my own, and ultimately working for a NAPA member up in Montana who primarily focuses on asset management but does some comprehensive financial planning. And the plan then was for me to acquire his business, and made the decision that's not what I wanted to do for various reasons. And so essentially I was left to what am I going to do as far as where am I going to start my business, and how's that business going to end up being run. And spoke with a number of NAPA members and part of NAPA ACA members, including John Einberger here in Boulder, Colorado, where I have my office, and Stuart Farnell, who was a member as well. And just talked to them and talked about their practices and about ACA and also whether there would be essentially a room in Boulder for another ACA advisor, and they both assured me that there would be and encouraged me to get involved. And ever since then, it's really been a whirlwind. You know, as far as my practice now, you know, there's myself. I have a full-time client service associate who has finished their CFP coursework working with me, and also I've got someone working part-time with me who's a CFP and an enrolled agent like I am. And my practice now is 55 full-time clients that are using me on an annual basis. And it continues to grow quickly, and I'm very grateful for that. But 6 years from 6 years ago, I only had 3 clients. I had one who came on over who was a contact of mine, and then I had my mom and my dad. So I only had 3 clients, so I know kind of what that's like. And, you know, as far as my personal profile, you know, there I'm married and I have three fairly young kids, three, eight, and 11. And so when I started the business, it was just very much in the throes of just essentially trying to get my business going while trying to support a family. And trust me, there's really nothing better for motivation. ACA, I think, has been just vitally important just in really helping me get my business going and then really enabling me to focus on building the business. I mean, because one thing that we often can do, and in Arlene, you know, when she counsels new advisors, can spot this from a mile away, is that often, you know, there's so many things when you're running a business that you can focus on that really have nothing about attracting clients. And one thing that we're really reminded of constantly as part of just the working through the process and working with Arlene and the other members of the staff and also other ACA advisors is that in order for you to be able to make it in this business, you need clients. And you shouldn't be spending a lot of time on systems. You shouldn't be spending a lot of time on evaluating software packages and paging through office furniture catalogs and all these other things, that until you have 15 clients, your job is to get 15 clients. And, you know, an ACA, I think, was just vital as far as just getting me to the point where I had a sustainable and then a profitable practice. And for that, I'm really grateful. You know, like Kathleen, would echo the fact that ACA has a tremendous community. Just love having all the people. I mean, one thing we tell our clients when they come in with us is that financial planning is just so incredibly complex. There's so many different areas. And if you look at estate planning, if you look at taxes, if you look at any one of these areas, I mean, ACA, as part of its membership, has people that it just astounds me, just kind of their intelligence and also their willingness to share. A number of just expert tax practitioners, you know, a Harvard-educated lawyer, CFAs, chartered financial analysts. So if you have something that you're not able to answer on your own, all you need to do is go on that intranet and put that there, and you'll get that question answered. And it's just incredible just having that as a resource and having all those people stand behind you. Because one thing as an entrepreneur, especially when you're first getting started, you know, it's hard to think that you have all the answers. And ACA really allows you to kind of get your business running and to rely upon that support network, but yet not get you so focused on education, where that takes away from your bringing on clients. I also love the annual conference. Don't miss that. And while the sessions are generally pretty good, I really appreciate just visiting with everyone and just talking with them and catching up and just seeing, how their practice is going and just sharing stories. One thing that's been important to me in building my business is something called an accountability group. So there are five other members across the country, ACA members, and what we do is every month we get on a call and just talk about our practices and just talk about how well we've done and whether we've made our targets and what our goals for clients and revenue are for the next quarter and some of the challenges that we've had and also some of the successes we've had. Really appreciate that level of sharing and also accountability, because in many cases, if you're just kind of off on your own, I mean, there's no one you can talk to about this stuff. But with ACA, you have a wonderful network of people that you can do that with and people who have done it before. That also is just very helpful, just as an inspiration. Just the people that have built successful businesses, and I always appreciated when I was getting started just seeing that people had made it. And it really helped motivate me and gave me the path to kind of build my practice as well to the point where, you know, it's really beyond where I thought it would be, and it continues to grow.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Kathy and Dave. I really appreciate it. I love it when I hear from members what I tell people, because every once in a while I think, I hope I'm not lying. So that's awesome when I hear your stories. And I think I said that, was it Kathy, was it you that answered the thread I had for one of our members the other day?
Yes.
And I even told him, I was like, I'm going to guess. I said, but it is, I said, I could be totally full of it. So I'm going to go do a posting and I'll get back to you. So he was very appreciative of the fact that I wasn't lying.
Straight from the heart.
It was. So anyway, and that is actually neither of the Michaels on this call. It is a different guy. You might have met him at the conference. But anyway, okay, so Michael and Michael, you are going to have to help us out as you introduce yourself. Normally on a call, we get to say, hey, you know, this is Arlene, blah, 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 blah. So you might have to really be formal and tell us your last name, too, so they can kind of keep track of who's asking what questions. So anyway, I'm going to just open it up and let you go for it.
I guess I could start. This is Michael Wagoner, and I'm in Castle Rock, Colorado. And first off, I'd like to just say thanks to Kathleen and Dave for being so generous with your time and your comments. That's really very helpful. I have a background in finance. I have an MBA in finance and a CFA and a CFP, and I've wanted to do financial planning for a long time. My most recent job was with ING downtown Denver. So I've been aware of ACA for quite some time and admired the way Bert has set this up and the way that he has kind of organized the process of interacting with clients. So ACA has been a real interesting avenue for me to look at in terms of exploring a way to dive into this, and also NAPFA. I've been to several of the NAPFA annual conferences and really admire the NAPFA people and the philosophy behind that approach with clients as well. So thanks again for you guys for offering up your words. And you know, as I've gotten closer and closer to trying to figure this out, I think the probably the easiest or the most frequent thing that still comes up in my mind is you know, establishing the process of marketing to the client, to folks, and you know, how am I gonna just go about that basically? And I've thought through that in a lot of detail, I guess, you know, this is kind of an obvious area, but I guess it wouldn't hurt to just ask you guys once again, how's the best way to get that ball rolling?
I'll take a stab at it. Let's see. I did a lot of outreach, and by that I mean I live in Massachusetts, and many of the school systems have adult community ed programs. So I contacted, I think it was 4 or 5 different school systems in the area, and they were all doing, you know, everything from yoga to basket weaving to salsa dancing. But they always had somebody that was coming in doing some financial presentations. So I kind of figured that I wanted to work with people like me. And at the time, I had 2 young teenagers. So I thought, well, I'll just talk about, you know, paying for college. So I put together a presentation on college. I put together one on retirement. I did something on understanding mutual funds. And I would book myself to deliver at least 3 of these, usually one-night sessions, lasting from about an hour and a half, and then a half hour for questions. I tried to book 3 a quarter, except for the summer. And it didn't give me clients right away. It got me out there. It got my name out there. And one of the nice things was that the school systems were the ones that did all of the advertising. They sent out the brochure. They did all of the registrations. All I had to do was show up and deliver. So I got my name out there. People came back and said, you know, I went to your conference. I went to your session 3 years ago, and now I need help. Or, you know, I never really was able to get to your conference or your session, but I saw the brochure and I remember your name, and now I need help. So that was probably the most effective, but it's sort of a long-term thing. Yeah, other than that, I networked. I went out and find estate planning attorneys, and they did refer clients to me. And I also advertised, and advertising is not a big thing in Cambridge, but I live in a small town, and you know, with a weekly paper. And in the beginning, I would advertise once a week for 6 months, and then I would do it once a month. And that gave me a lot of just credibility in the organization. Plus, and then of course, being having a website and being a NAPFA member helped a lot.
Mike, okay, is that the type of response you're looking for? Is something in that vein just how we built our practices, or is this more about kind of office space that you have questions about?
Both, but but Kathy's answer was very helpful. That's actually sort of an avenue that I had thought about as well. You know, that just doing some type of seminar, public speaking type engagements would be one way to, you know, get you out in front of the public.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's exactly the vein of the question I'm asking.
Okay, great. Well, let me with that in mind, let me just give you my perspective. One thing that I think I probably mentioned to you before, you know, I'm a columnist for a local newspaper here, and they carry me in a couple other papers, and so that's been good at getting my name out. NAPFA, of course, helps as well. I do get contacts from NAPFA. Also, other ACA members, sometimes I do get referrals from them. And I can tell you, just you know, wherever you end up settling or starting your practice, I do encourage you to reach out to other ACA members and NAPFA members for that matter, because, I mean, I do get a lot of calls here. And there are a number of people that just aren't a good fit, and that I'm just not working and interested in working with them. And that's just because my practice has grown. I have a more specific client profile than when I first got started. And so, you know, I know it's the same with my close neighbors, my ACA neighbors, Judy McNary in Broomfield, and then John Einberger in Boulder. I mean, they're, as far as the kind of clients they're looking to bring on, they really need to almost exactly meet their profile, and if they don't, then they're going to refer them out. So, mm-hmm. You know, there have definitely been times that I've wished there was another ACA member here. And so I think wherever you end up setting up your practice, you should reach out to other ACA members and also to NAPFA members as well, who may have a fairly high minimum as far as what they're looking at. So another thing that's helped out is just being a part of a Rotary Club, and that's not an overnight strategy. I mean, I think the Rotary members have a pretty good nose for a short timer and somebody who's just kind of looking to join and talk about their business all the time. But it's just the fact that you get involved in so many different projects, community service, and international, and also local, and that you're working side by side with people. You know, there's just a level of trust that's built up, and people can just see how well you do within those certain contexts, and they'll naturally want to work with you. So that's something where I've ended up getting a number of clients that have come in through that. And then also just do volunteering. You know, I taught a Wall Street game at a it was a Wall Street game class at a local elementary school for fifth graders, you know, where essentially it was math and also just kind of tracking stock prices and everything else, a little bit investment theory, a little delaying gratification, all those sort of things. So I really kind of forged a relationship through that with a really a fantastic client. And so it's really just about getting out there and not just trying something once. I mean, I think one thing that Kathy mentioned that's really important as far as advertising, you know, that's not anything I ever did, but I think it's persisting in something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may not be the first 20 times you're there at Rotary, at the 21st time. It may not be that first time you advertise, it may be the 20th time. You know, it's just all about being there and continuing to be there and just, because ultimately financial planning is all about when people have the need. It's all about them. And then they'll come and seek you out. And I guess what you want to do as an advisor is you want to be on the top of their mind when their need strikes them, when they have that. And that's always the first question I ask someone when they contact me, like, what, you know, why are you looking for a financial advisor? Why are you reaching out? You know, what's motivating you at this point? And you just want to be there available as a trusted resource when that time comes in that person's life.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And those are really good suggestions. It's those types of, I appreciate your answers. Those help make it more tangible and, you know, I can start to wrap your mind around the specific things that you're going to be doing with your time to carry out this strategy. So thank you very much.
One thing I think ACA still does is the Get Clients Now. Is that right, Arlene?
Yep, that is absolutely right.
Yeah, so I did that, and that's a good kind of an accountability thing to really, you know, do what you need to do to get those clients. And one thing I learned before that was that you always needed five channels for how to be attracting clients. One might be seminars, one might be networking, one might be your website, you know, and you might be doing a couple of other things. But like David said, you always have to be doing those five things all the time. And one year, you know, the classroom thing might bring in clients. The next year, the advertising might bring in clients. Another year, it might be networking. You know, so the saying is, everything works, but not all the time. And it's helpful to have the Get Clients Now program to sort of institutionalize what you need to do to make those work.
Okay, thank you.
I also wanted to say there aren't enough ACA members. I'm in central Massachusetts, and I have a client from Rhode Island because we only have one person in Rhode Island, and she was full. I think that's probably other parts of the country that are like that, where, you know, there just aren't enough of us we're really what people want for an advisor.
That's what I would tend to believe as well. And hopefully that there's if people view that service much in the way they do taking care of their health, for instance, or some type of holistically based approach to care for your financial life is similar to a holistically based approach to care for your health, for instance, then more and more people would recognize the value in the service.
Well, the cool thing, the thing I learned going from Garrett to ACA is with Garrett working hourly, I needed every client that called me. With ACA, I only need the clients that I want that are a good fit. It was a huge realization to me.
I'm sure that makes it much more, that makes your practice much more interesting, or that is much more amenable to the way you like to work.
Yeah, it's more enjoyable, and you don't have to work, you know, what you're getting value out of what you're doing. Yeah, commensurate.
Yeah, the long-term relationships with the clients, I'm sure benefits them as well, and they draw a lot of comfort from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, Kathy, do you have an office, or do you work from your house?
When I first started, I did have an outside office, and it was in one of those buildings with a lot of different kinds of tenants. You know, we shared the receptionist who answered everybody's phone. And I did that for 10 years. Then I'm an empty nester. When my kids moved out, I moved into a home office. And, you know, I probably could have done that from the very beginning. Nobody has had any issues with me having a home office coming to my house. I actually do still keep a virtual relationship with this office facility. But I don't usually meet clients there unless I have a problem, like I don't have any power or something like that.
Oh, right. Okay. Kathy, did you say that you do not do taxes then?
I did not want to do them in the beginning, and after the first year of going through, in the fourth quarter, people generally tend to do year-end tax planning meetings with clients, and after doing that, I realized that I really wanted to do the taxes because I wanted to make sure that all the stuff that we planned actually happened during tax season. And
okay.
I found it was not a big issue for me to start doing taxes.
Okay. Yeah, doing taxes. I know, Dave, you're an EA as well, and so it does seem like doing taxes would be, a great way. It's just a great way to stay in touch with the clients and to interface with their some of their larger concerns.
Yeah, Mike, as I mentioned, I mean, I think if you're just essentially focused on managing money, if you look at kind of a classic sort of a NAPA arrangement, NAPA advisor, you know, what they do is they'll have upfront financial planning. So they'll go ahead and we'll prepare a thick financial plan for the client, and we'll generally we'll cover every area, insurance, estate planning, taxes, and it's usually it's a one-time event. You know, they'll get that, print out that thick report, give it to them, maybe 20 recommendations, but after that, most NAPA members, from what I've been able to see, are just essentially doing investments. And they really do not do too much follow-up financial planning. And what I really appreciate about what ACA has done is essentially has enabled me to kind of build a wealth management practice in that, there's a good reason for me to be in contact with clients and working with clients throughout the year. And I really do think that helps as far as just you just being a constant a presence with your clients. I mean, I think one thing you find when you go to all the marketing mavens that are out there for financial planning, they talk about touches. And you want as many touches as possible. And those could be emails, it could be calls, and what have you. And honestly, one thing I've just tried to wrap my head around is if you're managing money, maybe you come up with something to talk about three or four times a year. I mean, how much are you going to, just run through these reports and talk about it? It seems like there's really not enough to discuss. But what I like about ACA is that just because we view financial planning as a process and not an event, that we're constantly working on their overall financial plan and checking in with them on their progress. Also tax planning, looking at what can be done to minimize their tax burden and also to get their withholding so they're not owing too much to the IRS or vice versa. And people really appreciate that process. You know, there are some clients that perhaps appreciate the tax planning more than the investments, which is hard for me to believe, but I mean, it's true. And ACA really gives you the blueprint to build that wealth management type approach where you're not just working on one area of their personal finances, that being investments, but you're focused on more than one area. And it really helps build the relationship with the clients.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Do you guys have either, do you have any other questions? I can't believe we just got a couple.
Well, this is Michael Garber, and I haven't got any questions right now, but maybe if I tell you a little bit about why I'm interested in this conversation, we might come up with some questions. Should I go
ahead? I love that. You should.
Okay. So I'm currently, and it's really kind of, I'll say this, when I was listening to both David and Kathy, I had the feeling that both of you were called up from central casting for my situation, that this whole thing might be a setup here, but you'll see why in a minute.
That's awesome.
So I'm currently a member of the Garrett Planning Network. And I've been practicing since 2005 on a part-time basis. I actually got my RIA and then started the CFP classes and got my CFP. I passed the exam in 2007 and got the CFP in 2011. Once I got the CFP, obviously it became a lot more easy to attract clients. And so at present, I have as many clients as I need to keep me busy, in fact, to keep me too busy, because I'm still working full-time. And, you know, it's outside the field of financial planning, and I work in a high-tech company, and I was in sales. I've been in training for a number of years, and now I'm getting into what I would call, well, is what's probably being called organizational development consulting. So, you know, I ironically, as I studied the CFP and had exposure to other planners and the way that they think about things, this complemented that engineering training background that I had in a unique way and has made me more valuable with my day job. So part of the reason that I started down this path in the mid-2000s was the feeling that, you know, there's a lot of people who, when they reach 50 or so, are not as useful in high-tech enterprises as they were in the past. And so they are retired. Plus, the other thing is that I was always interested in the economy and markets and finance and taxes to some degree, but I never really had an outlet for any of that. So there was both a push and a pull to get something going, and I always wanted to have my own business as well. So I just started out on my adventure and randomly guided myself through all of these things. And I did join Garrett in 2009. So I've got a number of clients now, and I've got some repeat clients as well, but what I've come to the realization is that I'm not really well compensated for the amount of time and effort I'm putting into this. And what I'm also finding is that my plans are getting bigger and longer because I don't feel right about, you know, if a client comes in and they say, well, what do I want to do with my 401k? I have a hard time focusing just on answering their question.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
As you interview them and find out their whole situation, the answer to that question depends on everything else. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I tend to throw in a lot of stuff into my plans that is beyond perhaps what they originally wanted, and my clients tend to walk away with saying, wow, you know, I never really thought about all that other stuff. I just wanted to know how to allocate between this fund and that fund in my 401k. I mean, that's extreme. It's really not quite that extreme in real life, but that's kind of the picture. And what I'm realizing is that I need a more effective way of getting compensated for the amount of effort that I'm putting in. And in a sense, too, I think I also need to attract a better type of client, a more suitable type of client that is open to that kind of relationship, mm-hmm. a long-term relationship, where they're willing to make more financial commitment to it and they will receive more value. So, I mean, that just points right to ACA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how I got to this point. I was at the NAPFA Spring Conference in Las Vegas last spring and happened to run into Bert Whitehead. He had been recognized, and I've known of him for years in reading industry publications, and he had been recognized as one of the top most influential people. And I saw him because he was wearing his signature cowboy hat at one of the breaks, and I walked up and introduced myself to him, and I didn't tell the whole story that I just told all of you now, but I mentioned that, you know, I've got this practice going. What's the next step? What would you say to somebody who's 55 that needed to work for a while longer to really grow their practice and then retire from a day job? And he said, well, you need to talk to these people. And he marched me right over to the ACA booth at the conference, and I ended up getting his book and reading that and being really interested in the whole life cycle idea and just the general holistic approach. And fast forward to today, we've got this low-level dialogue going on. So that's my situation. I don't know that I really have any. Well, I kind of do have a couple of questions. Since this has all happened and more recently, I'm starting to see clients who go to other advisors specifically because of tax questions. So they'll come to me, interview me in the Garrett format. We call that a get acquainted meeting. And they'll thank me very much. And I'll say, great, you know, this is really good, but I have this specific question over here that relates to taxes, and one of the other people that I interviewed has an EA, so I'm going to go work with him.
Hmm.
And I know a couple of EAs. I know who they're going to, and they're good people. And I think they are better matches in most cases than I am for those particular clients. And so I'm finding, well, if I had an EA, well, or some kind of tax credential, I might be better able to serve the kind of client that I'm looking to serve. Again, because I'm looking for that bigger relationship footprint. So I guess if I had a question, since a couple of you mentioned that you're EAs, and that I know that tax is a bigger part of ACA than perhaps other organizations, how long does it take you to get an EAA, and how hard is it, and is it worth doing? In the ACA model.
Well, I'll go first on this one. It took me, I believe, just over a year to get my EA. And I mean, one thing that they do ask people to do, and I think it's still this way, is just to at least have go through a basic tax course when you first join ACA. And so being an EA is certainly not a prerequisite, but for me, it was just something I wanted to do because I wanted to be able to have the credential to establish the fact that we had expertise in taxes in addition to being certified financial planners. And it is something that does distinguish us from other advisors out there. And I do have clients that if we didn't prepare their taxes or at least have a really good understanding of their tax situation, that they would be much less motivated to stay with me than they are. So that it is an important part of what we do. Just as far as how long it took, I believe, you know, it's three exams. You just go into a Prometric Center and take them. And, you know, it took just over a year to do that through self-study. And it was that hard. It was just a matter of perhaps I think sometimes when you're studying for these things, it can be a little bit more of a challenge. Just the fact that you got to focus on things that perhaps you view are not being relevant in the long term and may not be that useful to day-to-day practice. And that was true with the EA. And that, of course, you are focusing quite a bit on the 1040 and Schedule C and a lot of the other more common schedules, but you also need to get into corporate taxes and S-corps and C-corps and partnerships and taxes, and we don't do any of that. And you know, of course, it's helpful to have an understanding of all those things, but those aren't things that we focus on, we don't do. So trying to really get my head wrapped around that and motivated, that was a little bit of a challenge, but in the end, it ended up working out fine. One thing with the EA, of course, is you have continuing education requirements. And while there is some overlap between those and NAPA, you know, you can use those for NAPA, the taxes. It is, you know, 24 hours a year that you're doing. And it ended up paying off in that now that we're seeing regulations, or I guess there were proposed regulations that have been backed off for registered tax preparer, and a lot of states have their own tax preparer regulations that you need to comply with or you need to pass an exam. California and Oregon are two of them that I'm familiar with. With an EA, of course, you, in most cases, you do get out of that. And by having an EA, you're just able to prepare the client's taxes. So that's kind of the time I put into it and how it's helped my practice. It's something that goes beyond just a CFP, and it does allow us to differentiate us. And also, one thing I love about taxes is when you save somebody money, you know, whenever you talk about investments, it's always that we expect this is going to work out in the long term. And this is our expected return, and, you know, there'll be years where the returns aren't so good, and there'll be years when they're better. But over time, it will end up working out. Well, with taxes, when you save somebody money, like you're saving them money. I mean, that, if you found them like $3,000 because of the deduction that was missed, or there's something you thought of, you know, as far as a non-qualified deferred compensation plan or a stock option strategy or something like that, you save them, you know, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000. That's certain money. And people love it. They love getting checks from the IRS. There's no one they'd rather get checks from than the IRS. And if they can do so legally, and we can be a part of that, you know, we've made a friend forever.
Well, and it's because you've rationalized your fee, not just in the long term, but in the short term.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the first thing I'd like to say is that you don't have to be an enrolled agent to do people's taxes. You have to take a tax class when you join, or either when you join ACA or before. I'm not sure how it works now. But I took the H&R Block, 15-week tax class, and I felt pretty confident, pretty comfortable doing 1040s and Schedule Cs and Ds and all that for clients without being an enrolled agent. And there's enough people behind you in ACA that can answer questions if things get sticky. But, you know, the software that you can use helps a lot. So I wouldn't let not being an EA keep you from answering tax questions, learning about taxes, and getting comfortable. That said, I also did go after becoming an EA just because I did want to hold myself out as a tax preparer, and I did want people to know that I took it seriously. So it took me about a year with the three exams, and I was laughing about taking the exams because two of them were fine. The administrative one was fine. The one that had to do with the 1040s was fine. But the corporate finance, I have no idea how I passed that part of the exam. But I did. I, you know, they give you, I think, a pass-fail. And, you know, I probably just squeaked by because really all I was doing was memorizing answers. It did not make any sense to me at all. So there you go. And I don't use it at all. I mean, I wish I knew a little bit more than I do now, but it's not really something that I deal with in my everyday life. But I would say, you know, if you do, it's I wish that the registered tax preparer was not put on hold, because I think that I would rather have done that. That would have been sufficient for me, just because the continuing ed, those 24 hours a year, can be rather challenging to get all of that in, especially when you procrastinate like I do. But the other thing about doing people's taxes is that I had a new client a couple of years ago, and I was just entering his most recent tax return information into my tax planning software, and I discovered that his tax preparer hadn't accounted for about $4,000 in state withholding taxes. And that was a simple mistake that any tax preparer could do in the heat of tax, you know, the tax season. But my client got a $4,000 refund. And, you know, that's, like David said, that's real money.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to weigh in real quickly, because a couple of, I think you both made mention to, like, I think it's still like this. I'm not sure. So I'll weigh in on the how it is. I agree with everything said about EA. We had folks that come through and say, bag it, if I'm going to be in learning mode, I'm going to do this and get a couple letters to throw after my name. And there is some value to that, definitely. But it is not required. We do require that you take a tax class. H&R Block is no longer an option. Their choice, not ours. But they got unfriendly to our members, and for a while we played some games where we would tell new members just, you know, kind of stay under the radar. And when one of my brand new members got escorted from the first class, I was mortified on her behalf. She was mortified because it was like they were taking her to jail. It was horrible. So now I just say, you steer clear. So anyway, people's tax, national tax, and pronto tax are the three that our members are using these days. So any of those is good. There are a lot of them are online, or they'll send you a big heavy book and you do things online, and it's kind of self-paced and great. So that's the starting point. But like I said, I've had people that say, dang it, I'm gonna rock and roll all the way through these EA exams. And yes, the business one is definitely the hardest one. So so that said, and the phrase we often use that they're talking about with their taxing is that it makes the clients sticky. Mm-hmm. You know, once they do taxes with you, it's harder for them to leave. That's a bigger change. And I love the comments about the refund, because that's so true. Yeah, that is honest to goodness money that you get to go spend. So
the other thing I'm finding is I have return clients. They want somebody to do their taxes, and you know, right now that can't be me. But if I've got a client who asks me to do their taxes and I've got the ability to do it, I don't really even have to market myself. I can say yes, I can do that for you, and bill them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can I say one more thing to Mike Garber?
Go ahead.
You know, you talked about the early retiree, you know, the people who get retired in their 50s. And that's something that, you know, that I definitely see a lot of, has happened to my clients, has happened to my husband. And I am just so glad that I now, even though I didn't want to be self-employed to begin with, I am so glad that now I am self-employed, because I feel like I'm in control of my destiny, my future. I'm a little older than you are, but, you know, it's just wonderful to be in control of my own destiny.
And that's exactly what I want as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess the one fear that I have is being a part-timer now, when the time actually comes to cutting over to doing this full-time, I will need to bump up my gross work significantly from where it is today, and obviously I'll have more time to put into it as well, but I want to be ready to make that transition in an orderly way, and I just don't know the answer to that. I'm not currently worried about it or anything, but I just know that I just don't see it happening with the current model that I have.
Mm-hmm.
either of you have, both of you just jumped in full-time. You were full-time when you started with ACA, correct?
I don't think I was. But okay. My husband was working at the time. So
okay.
I didn't really have the pressure to do that.
Okay. We have several members. Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
And I jumped into it full-time, and my wife was not working outside the home. So I had plenty of pressure.
Hmm. But I will say, when I made the transition from Garrett to ACA, you know, my first client, my first retainer client, I had never charged anybody more than $2,500 for a project. My first retainer client was $9,000, and they didn't blink an eye when they signed the contract. You know, you don't need too many clients like that. I mean, it helps to have clients like that to build your business.
Right.
It's a lot easier.
So what do the retainers tend to run, and what's the retention rate?
I think I'll jump in on this one. And well, I'd love for Dave and Kathy to speak specifically to their practices if they're willing. But on average, what I quote our new members as they're getting ramped up, and you'll be a little different because you've got more experience. But generally, about 5,000 is a nice 5,000-6,000 is a nice average. I find a very direct correlation between how well a person tracks their business and how well they do. It is really interesting. If somebody can talk to me on a monthly concierge call and say, well, as of today, my average retainer is $5,238, that's going to ramp up. That's going to keep on going up because they're on it and they're paying attention. If somebody calls and they're like, I don't know, I'm dead, but I'm feeling good. Well, that's great, and they're feeling good, and that's okay, but it isn't quite the same recipe for success. So, Dave and Kathy, what are your thoughts on that? Would you concur?
I would say I generally charge more for the first year, and at this point I don't really have any first-year clients. They're all renewals. But I would say first year, five to 10,000? Yeah.
Great.
Well, generally because I tend to work with people who are in high tech. So, and usually they're both employed, so big salaries, you know, 401ks, maybe they're in their 40s. It depends, I think, where they are in the life cycle.
And for me, a minimum new retainer, unless I've got somebody who's young and a great saver and kind of on a good road there. But for most people, the minimum is 7,000 for the first year, and then that would go down to 5,500 in subsequent years. My average is closer to over 8,000 for the first year, and then $1,500 lower in subsequent years. As far as retention, it's over 90%. I'd say it's close to averages about 95%. On an annual basis. So pretty good, at least as far as what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't say retention is an issue. I mean, sometimes there's people that you find out you'd like to drop. And somehow they have a way of going away after a while. But yeah, retention's not an issue.
Yeah, I've not had folks, even our newest members, as I work with them during the first 2 years, I have not ever had anyone who really struggles and says, oh my gosh, you know, I lost 50% of my clients. That has never been on my radar screen. Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of clients who come to me now looking for somebody that doesn't want a retainer. And so, you know, I know that there's people out there who have the ability to attract clients and charge a retainer and keep them. And I don't think they're all ACA. We have a couple ACA out here, but that's not the only source.
Michael, refresh my memory. Where are you? I don't have a screen in front of me.
I'm in Silicon Valley.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I have an hourly office in the, well, pretty much the way Kathleen described it. It's a, you know, it's a rent by the hour facility. I get a package. And it's right in the heart of Silicon Valley. It's literally like across about a mile from Intel's headquarters, and you know it's just right in the middle of everything.
Okay, great. You know, I just realized what time it is. I'm so sorry. I'm being a horrible facilitator. I believe we were scheduled for 1 hour. We are over that. I'm so sorry. So I'm gonna. Both Michaels, I've taken notes on some of the questions you've asked, and so I want to have more in-depth conversations so that we can really follow up, and I'd love to get you connected with members that have experienced what you are thinking you're going to be going through or what you're concerned about, so we can really get some answers for you. So I'll be reaching out to both of you individually later so we can get something set up. Actually, Michael Wagoner, you're already on my calendar somewhere, aren't you? Are we scheduled to talk the next few days?
We talked about that. I was thinking about, you know, setting something up with you like next week.
Okay, that would be lovely. So yeah, I'll email both of you and we'll work forward and get situated. And Kathy and Dave, I can't thank you enough for your time and your stories and your insights. Would it be acceptable if these guys have other questions they want to take, since we've run out of time, if they want to reach out to you individually? Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Fine with me.
Okay. I will go ahead and send some contact info for you so that they can do that if they've got questions. And thank you so much, everyone, for coming and your fantastic questions. It's been wonderful. Have a great day, and since it's Friday, have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.